Hare Krishna. Hare Rama. Yes, so devotees, welcome, welcome, welcome to this wonderful program, Ram Navami, Sri Ram Navami 2017, here at our beautiful, wonderful ISKCON Midrand Temple. Let us begin by reading a verse. Let us begin by reading a verse which is quoted in Nectar of Devotion by Rupa Goswami and Srila Prabhupada. It's also quoted in Chaitanya Charitamrita, where it is Madhya Lila chapter 22, verse 34. And it comes from Ramayana, Yudha Kanda, chapter 18, it is verse 33. So let's read this verse, and then we'll start saying a few things about Lord Ram. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, chapter 22, verse 34, quoted from Ramayana, Yudha Kanda, 1833. And this is Lord Ram speaking. Sakrid eva prapano yas, talas miti chayachate, abhayam sarvada tasmai, Didam yetad vratam mama. Vrata means vow. So Lord Ram says, it is my vow that if a person only once seriously surrenders unto me, saying, my dear Lord, from this day I am yours, and prays to me for courage, I shall immediately award courage to that person, and he will always remain safe from that time on. Isn't that wonderful? It's very deep. And because it's so deep, therefore it appears in Nectar of Devotion, which is our guide on the path of devotional service. And this is here actually quoted, spoken in Chaitanya Charitamrita. It is repeated, it is spoken by Lord Chaitanya himself. So this is Lord Ram. He is very kind, he is very merciful. He's a very gentle, supreme person. And this particular verse, because this is the only, if not the only, it is certainly one of the only, but it may actually be the only verse from Ramayana, which is quoted in, so to speak, our literatures which really indicate some great significance. Let me just tell you the background to this verse. It's from the Ramayana Yudha Kanda. So you know what that means, right? Yudha means the battle. Yudha, Yud, means battle. So what happened was that Lord Ramachandra and his army, they were waiting, or preparing at least, say, to cross across to Lanka from the eastern, southeastern shore of India. So they were preparing, getting ready, making different arrangements. They built already the bridge, or practically built. And then what should they see? One morning, they saw an aircraft, not one of our regular aircrafts, like what I came up from Durban and today, but some special, like heavenly type aircraft, perhaps like a flower aeroplane, coming, approaching the beach from the direction of Lanka. Lanka, the headquarters of Ravana. So they saw that, and everyone was very surprised. What is going on? And who is in this craft? And as it came closer, they saw that in it is Vibhishan, one of the brothers of Ravana. Ravana had a number of brothers. Vibhishan was one, but he was very different from the others in that Vibhishan was a devotee. He was actually a devotee, despite being born in such a family. Rakshasa family means cannibal, man-eater. Now, of course, nowadays people, so many people, the great majority eat meat, and to them it's not a big thing, it's just normal. We, of course, those at least who are trying to follow Krishna consciousness more seriously, we're vegetarian. And, you know, for us, meat eating, obviously, we're not into that at all. But so many people are, and they take it to be normal. But what if a person as a meat eater met someone who was a cannibal? What do you eat? Well, I eat people. Preferably young ones. Anyway, whatever. But even for someone who is a meat eater, it would be a bit of a shock, wouldn't it? You would be, the person would be taken aback. So, but despite being born in this family, Vibhishan was a devotee, and he was just repeatedly trying to preach to Ravan, to his brother, again and again and again. Don't fight against Ram, particularly that. Don't fight against Ram. Just give Sita back. You have plenty of women already. Just give Sita back, and that everything will be settled. But Ravan would not do that. And eventually, Ravan got so fed up with Vibhishan trying to preach to him and glorify Lord Ram and all these things, that he kicked him out. He just kicked him out. And so Vibhishan flew across from Lanka, and here he is now coming in, and Lord Ram was there, and some of his leaders, like Angada, particularly. Angada saw here, look, here comes this aircraft from Lanka, and oh, it's Vibhishan, one of Ravana's brothers. Let's just kill him. And Lord Ram said, no, no, it's okay. He's just one. Look how many of us there are. What can he do? Let's see what he does. But Angada was saying, no, we should just kill him. He's one of Ravan's brothers. How can he be trusted? And Lord Ram was saying, no, no, please, be calm. Let us see what he wants. But Angada could not be calm. And eventually, Vibhishan landed on the beach there. And they all came over. And Angada is saying to Lord Ram, come on, let me kill him. He's probably just going to lie to us, trying to trick us. Let me just kill him. Then we don't need to worry if what he says is true or not. And they say, some say that he said, my dear Lord Ram, you know, the only good demon is a dead demon. So then Vibhishan got out of his aircraft, offered his dandavats to Lord Ram, and said what Lord Ram here is himself saying, my dear Lord, from this day I am yours. And Angada said, don't believe him. Don't trust him. Just let me kill him. And Lord Ram became a little angry, and he spoke this verse. He said, actually, first of all, he said that even if Ravana himself came and did like this and said like this to me, from this day on, I'm yours. Even if Ravana did that, I would immediately accept him. And then he spoke this verse. It is my vow that if one only once seriously surrenders unto me, saying, my dear Lord, from this day I am yours, and prays to me for courage, I shall immediately award courage to that person, and he will always remain safe from that time on. So it's a very beautiful verse spoken by Lord Ram. And through this we get a glimpse into the heart of Lord Ram. So today is his appearance day. How wonderful. And Lord Ram, of course, he appeared in the Treta Yuga. Currently we are in Kali Yuga. I think you all know these things. Satya Yuga, there's a cycle of four ages, beginning with Satya Yuga, which is like a golden age. Next is Treta Yuga, something like a silver age. Next there is Dwapara Yuga, which is something like a bronze age. Something like that. And then there's Kali Yuga, which we're in the beginnings of now, which is an iron age. So in other words, there's a deterioration from one age to the other. Lord Ram appears in Treta Yuga. But the question is, which Treta Yuga? And Srila Jiva Goswami, one of our great previous acharyas, he talks about this in his literature named Krishna Sandarbha. First thing to understand, and I don't want to bewilder you with numbers, but in one day of Lord Brahma, there are 1,000 cycles of the four yugas. I just mentioned the four yugas. There's 1,000 cycles. Those 1,000 cycles are divided into 14 groups of 71 or so each. and those 1471s are ruled over by what is called a manu. So there are 14 manus in a day of Brahma, each one presiding over 71 cycles of the yugas. We are currently in the seventh cycle in this day of Brahma. It is right, we are right in the middle of Lord Brahma's day. And indeed, Srila Prabhupada said once that it is around Lord Brahma's lunchtime. Actually. So now, Lord Krishna appears in the lifetime of the seventh Manu, this time now roughly, at the end of the Dwapara Yuga. It's actually the 28th cycle of those 71 cycles in the period of that seventh Manu. Have I lost you yet? Your heads may be spinning, I'm sorry. 28th cycle. Jiva Goswami anyway says, Lord Ram appears. Well, he actually says, many great authorities say that Lord Ram appeared in the Treta Yuga in the 24th cycle. Means four cycles before. Each cycle is 4,320,000 years. Multiplied by four gets you what, about 18 or 17 million years ago. This is when Lord Ram appeared. At least Jiva Goswami, he says like that. And Lord Ram has a particular nature. He is very sort of upright, honest, moral, very high moral standards. He is called, sometimes he's referred to as Maryada Purushottama. Purushottama means the Supreme Person. Maryada means who follows rules and regulations. Krishna, Lord Krishna is called Lila Purushottama, the Supreme Person, who his particular sort of very prominent characteristic is he performs amazing pastimes. Just wonderful, colorful pastimes. Whereas Lord Chaitanya, the most recent incarnation of Krishna, he is called Prema Purushottama, the Supreme Person who particularly exhibits, displays love. So, but Lord Ram, he is Maryada Purushottama, Supreme Personality of Godhead, who's showing great moral uprightness and character, great honesty, these types of characteristics. And of course, we don't have so much time this evening, so we cannot go in great detail through a lot of the pastimes and so many things which happened. But we can mention a few things. In this regard, I imagine all or so many of you are basically familiar with the story of Lord Ram and, you know, at least sort of main events which occurred. But one example, very amazing example, of Lord Ram's honesty and uprightness and character was when he was told that he was to be sent into exile. So, you know, it's a long story. in Krishna consciousness, we have many long stories, and it's one of them. But basically, his father Dasarath had three wives, the second of whom was Kaikeyi, who generally was very nice and very devoted to Lord Ram. She was the mother of Bharat. But when Dasarath, the father, the king, decided that I'm getting old now, I want to retire, so I want to install Ram as the, in Sanskrit, Yuvaraj. Yuvaraj means like the youth king. In English, there's a term, prince regent, means the person's a prince, but he's going to become the king before too long. So this is what Dasarath decided to do, and all sorts of preparations were made. And again, like I said, it's a long story, but Kaikeyi, the second of his three wives, who otherwise was just a wonderful lady and very devoted to Lord Ram, her mind got changed. She heard some poisonous talk. Sometimes we do a seminar about the demons in Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes and the anathas, or sort of unpleasant things they represent. One of them is the snake, Kaliya, who represents the anatha, the unpleasant practice of poisoning devotees' hearts with, not with some actual poison, but with poisonous talk. And they say the tongue is a very powerful weapon, and the ears are very easy targets. All that has to be there is, the ears have to simply be in range of the tongue, if you follow what I mean by in range. In other words, that the ear can not so far away that you can't hear what they're saying. You just have to be within earshot when a person is talking. And then, as long as you're within range of the tongue will find your ear. Whether it's aiming at whether they're talking to you, or whether they're talking to someone here and you're over there, as long as you're in range, the tongue will find the ear. So poisonous talk, it's very dangerous. And we teach this in Krishna consciousness. Avoid making poisonous talk. And if anyone tries to make some to you, get away. Just get away. Because it can even ruin your Krishna consciousness, actually. And if not ruin, at least it can create quite a disturbance. So this is what happened to Kaikeyi. Her sort of maid servant assistant Mantara started speaking very badly to her, and from being this wonderful lady, she got turned around and against Ram. And she went to the father Dasarath, her husband, and said, you know, you promised me, again, another long story, but you promised me two boons. I could ask for two things because of a certain situation. I didn't ask then, I want to ask now. And Dasarath, of course, said yes. And she said, all right, that my son Bharat become the Yuvaraj, In other words, he'll be installed not actually as the king, but as the, you know, shortly to be king. It's an important point. Bharata was never made king as such. So he is installed as the Yuvaraj, and Ram is exiled to the forest for 14 years. Of course, the question may arise, why 14 years? Why not 13? Why not 15? Why not forever? Wouldn't forever be better if you want to get rid of them, get them out of the way? The thing is that according to old Vedic standards, after 14 years, if there's a gap of 14 years, a person loses their sort of like family rights. Yeah. Like particularly of inheritance and those types of rights are lost after 14 years. So those were the two boons. Install Bharat, banish Ram, and poor Dasarath was devastated. And then Lord Ram came, and Dasarath couldn't even speak. But Kaikeyi said that, you know, your father wants to say something to you, but he can't. So I'll say it to you. And she told Lord Ram, this is the situation. You are now banished. And how would you react? How would you expect a person to react in a situation like that? And she told Ram that, you know, I'm so sorry. I'm sure you're very disappointed and upset with your father. And Lord Ram said, Lord Ram became distressed and said, oh, how terrible. How terrible. How terrible that you would think. That's really terrible. It's catastrophic. How terrible that you would think, that I would think, that this is bad. If it's the order of my father, I accept it immediately. Not just accept it, I accept it happily, joyfully. I will dance to the forest if it is the will of my father. And he says, on my father's order, I'm willing to enter fire immediately. Commanded by him, I will drink strong poison immediately, or throw myself into the ocean. If this is what the king's request is, I will do it. This gives a little insight into the character, the sort of uprightness of Lord Ram. Not like, oh no, wait, hang on a minute, let's talk about this, or something like that. Or it just can't be. Well, let me kill Bharat then. Nothing like that at all. And then, it's, you know, this is one of the main themes in the pastimes of Lord Rama, just in his character, in the character of Sita Devi, in the character of Lakshman, Hanuman, all these personalities. Very, very, very prominent feature of their characters. And therefore Lord Rama is called Maryada Purushottama. He follows rules and regulations. He does what is right and doesn't do what is wrong at all. And he told her that I shall do it. I promise. Ram does not speak twice. And it's not said exactly at that place, but it is said elsewhere. Lord Ram says, I have one word. I have one word. And I have one arrow. So if there's anything to be said, I have one word. Not like flexi speak. Many years ago, one of our devotees was telling us about some sort of current event of the day in South African politics. And he said, yes, I saw it on television, my wife told me. This is called flexi speak. And they say, actually, about politicians. Politicians say that, yes, well, you know, such and such and such and such. But on the other hand, such something else. And then they may say, but on the other hand means another hand, a third hand. On another hand, something else. So you tend, you know, particularly politics, you have these multi-handed people who are promoting, you know, a number of different ideas on a particular subject, but not Lord Ram. He had one word and one wife. His father had three, and it was a custom. It was more or less normal that at least the Kshatriya men, the royalty, the warriors, the really powerful men, it was common they would have more than one wife. And Srila Prabhupada, just about at the end of the 10th chapter of the 9th canto, which is discussing the pastimes of Lord Ram, Srila Prabhupada makes the point about Lord Ram that when Sita Devi was kidnapped, Prabhupada says, Lord Ram could have manifested hundreds or thousands of replacement Sitas. But he didn't. He undertook the great difficulty of mounting that great military campaign, and so many people died. It was devastating. Just to rescue Sita. Only one wife. And one arrow. If you were his enemy, you got the arrow. You know, from the bow, not handed to you on a plate. So he was a man of ones. One word, one wife, one arrow. Sita Devi is the same. I don't know if you've ever read Sita Devi's sort of, what would you say, entreaty, appeal to Lord Ram. Because after what we just mentioned, Lord Ram is informed of his exile. He then went and told a few different people, his mother, Kausalya, and then he went and told Sita, I'm exiled to the forest, and so 14 years, there we are. And Sita Devi said, when are we leaving? And Lord Ram said, we are not leaving. I am leaving. You stay here. It is not suitable for you, princess, to live in a forest. And Sita Devi appealed to Lord Ram, and just listen to this. I don't know if you've heard it before. This is just part of it. And you'll get some insight into her character also. Father, mother, brother, son, and daughter-in-law, enjoy their particular good fortune according to their pious activities. But the wife alone achieves the same fortune as her husband. Therefore, as you've been banished to the forest, I also am ordered to the forest. For a married woman, neither her father, her own body, her mother, nor her girlfriends are ever her shelter in this world or in death. Only her husband is. If you leave for the forest today, O descendant of Raghu, I will walk ahead of you, crushing the sharp thorns and blades of kusha grass with my bare feet. In this way, sparing your feet from any pain, I will walk before you, scouting for danger, and will only eat the remnants of your food, casting away your envy at my courage and your anger at my disobedience to stay in Ayodhya. Take me with you without any hesitation. There is no sin in me for which I should be left behind. In all circumstances, shelter in the shade of the feet of one's husband is better than residence in a palace, in an aircraft, or travel through outer space. I do not need any instruction at this time regarding how I should act. Not taking any servants, I shall enter the jungle, which is full of many different wild beasts and packs of tigers. Disregarding sovereignty over the three worlds and thinking only of my vow to my husband, I shall reside as happily in the wilderness as I would in my father's palace. I cannot be stopped. I will no doubt accompany you, O most fortunate one. I'll eat fruits and roots every day and will not trouble you. I want to see the mountains, ponds, and lakes being protected by you, my Lord. I shall happily live thousands of years or hundreds of thousands of years with you in this way. What to speak of 14 years? Indeed, if residence in heaven were available without you, I would not accept it. O tiger among men, clinging to your feet and being loved by you, I shall live in that wilderness as if in my father's home. Grant my request and take me along. I am exclusively devoted to you, and my mind is attached to you. I have never even mentally looked at another man. What do you think of that? Yeah. Yeah, of course, her husband is Lord Ram. Your husband, ladies. It's easy to get inspired by someone. It is truly inspirational. But again, it gives a glimpse into the character, what these people are like, and sort of the themes running through the pastimes of Lord Ram. Here's another interesting little point. I don't know if you're aware, but immediately after the news came out, I mean like within minutes, it became understood that it wasn't just Kaikeyi, it was Mantra, actually, who had contaminated her mind. And Shatrughna was told that. And Shatrughna came to kill Mantara, and he found her decorated with jewelry, kind of showing off. She was a hunchback, physically deformed person. And he just grabbed her and threw her through the air into a wall and then just dragged her around, smashing her. And he was about to kill her. And Lakshmana, who came, Bharat came. And Bharat came and said, no, don't kill her. Don't kill her. Ram would not appreciate. And Bharat said, I was going to kill my mother, Kaikeyi. But then I thought, no, Ram would not appreciate it. So I didn't kill her. So in other words, it was a dramatic scene there. It was very dramatic. But these personalities, because they're such, by our standards, like otherworldly personalities, Maryada Purushottama, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is just showing high, high standards of character. So they responded in different ways to all these different situations. And then after a little while, now they're out in the forest, and Sita Devi was kidnapped. Well, let me just diverge to one little point first. Before Ram and Sita were married, you know, there was the Swayamvara ceremony. It's like a competition. Who is the most powerful, heroic young prince? And Sita can then select her to be her husband. And there was the bow of Lord Shiva. It could only be carried by 300 men. It was so big and so heavy. Competition was, who can pick it up first of all, one man, and string it and fire an arrow from it. The bow was lying in the palace. One day, Sita and her friends were having a ball game in the courtyards of the palace, and the ball became stuck in a tree. And they tried to shake the tree, they couldn't dislodge the ball. Someone tried to climb the tree, they couldn't reach it. And what to do? So then Sita said, wait a minute. In the room just nearby here is that bow, that big bow. Maybe we can get the bow and use the bow to poke the ball out of the tree. So Sita went in and with one hand picked up the bow and brought it out and poked the ball out of the tree and then took the bow back and put it down. But it took 300 men, and not just men, like, you know, from men's. Or some guy. Some guy. But 300 warriors, big, powerful men, real, like professional warriors. And when the guards who were guarding it saw that, they couldn't believe it. How was it possible? Because she is not just some young lady. She is the goddess of fortune from the kingdom of God. She's expanded. Well, actually, Lakshmi Devi is expanded from her. In Vaikuntha, the highest realm is Ayodhya, beneath Goloka Vrindavan. There is Sita and Ram. Then beneath them are the other Vaikuntha planets with Lakshmi Narayan in different forms. So anyway, then came the kidnapping. And another long story, we will not go into it actually. But she got kidnapped by Ravan. And just another little aside, I don't know if you're aware, at that Swayamvara where all these princes had to lift the bow, no one could lift it. Ravan was there, and he tried to lift it, but he couldn't lift it. He lifted it, and he was the only one who could lift it, like, you know, a couple of inches, straining and struggling, and then it was too much, and he collapsed. And the bow fell on his fingers, and was crushing his fingers. And Lord Ram, with one hand, lifted the bow off his fingers, and then he strung it, put an arrow on it, pulled the string back and back and back, and the bow broke. So anyway, then there was the kidnapping, and the question arises, if Ravan couldn't lift the bow at all, he almost lost his fingers. And if Sita lifted the bow with one hand, how did Ravan kidnap her? Isn't that a good question? And there's a good answer, is that Lord Ram went off into the forest to catch the golden deer. Lakshman remained back, but then he also went, and he made a circle around Sita, magical circle protected by Agni Mantra. Agni Mantra. Agni, the goddess, god of fire. And then, so then Lakshman went, and Ravan came, and Ravan sort of tricked Sita to step out of that magical circle of Agni Mantra. And then he kidnapped her. And she fought. She fought. But there was nothing she could do against Ravan. So what actually happened, and it's important for devotees to understand this, is that as she passed through the circle of Agni Mantra, Sita went to Agni Loka, and a Maya Sita came out. Although you couldn't see that there goes Sita, oh, and here comes Maya Sita. It was like totally simultaneous. Like Krishna kills the demons. But I don't know if you're aware, Krishna doesn't kill any demons. Vishnu kills the demons. When Krishna kills the demons, it's Vishnu acting. But you don't see Krishna step back. Vishnu steps forward and kills the demon. And steps back into Krishna. It's just like Krishna kills the demons. But actually it's Vishnu. So, and that Maya Sita, it is not Puratasi, but that Maya Sita became, I forget her name, but in Tirupati Leela, Maya Sita became the wife of Balaji, the Maya Sita. After associating with Lord Ram, she wanted to be his wife, but he had taken that Ekapatni Vrata, the vow, only one wife. But she remained attached to him. So then later she appeared and became the wife of Balaji. From Tirupati. Yeah, that's another long story. That's a story and a half. So, yeah, so Ravan stole Sita, the Maya Sita, but still we can say Sita, and held her for 1 month. And, you know, he's Rakshasa, and he told Sita, listen, I don't want to force myself on you. I want you to willingly come forward and voluntarily accept me as a consort. and I'll give you 1 month for that. And if after 1 month you don't do that, I'll eat you. Yeah, for breakfast. So, then Ram got his army together. Well, just after Sita was kidnapped, that is when Hanuman comes on the scene. You know, we haven't got time to talk much about Hanuman, but come to, I think, Lanesha on Tuesday, Hanuman Jayanti, and we will have a Hanuman Leela evening. Okay. But now Hanuman appeared on the scene at that time, just when Sita had been kidnapped and Ram was in total devastation. And Hanuman wanted to help. So Hanuman said, "Me and my associates, we know all the forests around here. Just tell us what Sita looks like. We'll find her." He's asking Lakshman. Because Ram couldn't really speak. So, Lakshman, give me a description of your sister-in-law. Lakshman said, "I don't know what she looks like." And Hanuman said, No, I mean Sita, your sister-in-law, right? Brother's wife? That one. Tell me what she looks like. I want to help. I don't know what she looks like. Tell me what she looks like. And Lakshman said, "I don't know." And Hanuman said, "Listen, I'm trying to help you. Don't joke with me, please. Tell me what she looks like." And Lakshman said, "I really don't know. I've never looked above her feet." And then he gave a very beautiful description of her feet. And when Hanuman jumped across to Lanka with the ring, you know about the ring, right? And she recognized the ring. And he thought, aha, she recognizes the ring. Must be Sita. But think about it. Anyone can make a ring. Rings are not so special. But markings, particularly underneath the soles of the feet, Sita Devi, as the goddess of fortune, she has different markings. A fish, an elephant. These are actual, they're sort of like, almost like they're carved into her, the bottoms of her feet. These different markings. And Lakshman had described those in detail to Hanuman. And then Hanuman looked at her feet and saw those markings. And, you know, marking a ring, you can make a ring. Markings under your feet, there's not much you can do about that. You've either got them or not. And then he understood, this is definitely Sita. So anyway, then Lord Ram came, the army came, and there was this great battle. And you know that story. And eventually Lord Ram killed Ravana, rescued Sita. And as they say, they all lived happily ever after. Sort of. Not exactly, actually. But anyway, that was nice. They returned to Ayodhya. But one thing to consider about the pastimes of Lord Ram and the character of Lord Ram and just the whole Ram Leela is this, that. And Srila Prabhupada talks about it to some degree. That Lord Ram, he is the Supreme Lord. He is a form of Krishna. And what does Krishna say? Sarvasya chaham hridi sannivishto. I'm in the heart of every living entity. And Prabhupada makes the point that Lord Ram, Krishna Lord Ram, Lord Ram was also in the heart of Ravana. And in the heart, our hearts, every heart, there is what you could call an on-off switch. In the heart. And one day, devotees, I'm sorry to say, one day your switch, which is currently on, is going to be switched off. And that's going to be it for this lifetime. So Prabhupada made the point that Lord Ram was in the heart of Ravana. And if he had wanted, he could have just switched off his heart, and that would have been the end of Ravana. And no need for all this big battle and millions and millions being killed. And Lord Ram, as the Supreme Lord, when, you know, first of all, he could have stopped Ravana kidnapping Sita. It would not have been a big problem at all. But he didn't do that. But even when Sita was captive there in the Ashoka Grove in Lanka, Lord Ram could have stretched out his arm and just extracted her from that situation. And again, no need for all the battle and all that. But he didn't. He didn't. He went through this big military campaign and so many were killed. It's described in Ramayana that when Ravana came out on the battlefield on the last day, the day he was killed, he was the only one left on his side. Lord Ram, all of his soldiers had been brought back to life. And Ravana came out and saw them all. And the number of soldiers, monkeys and bears mainly, that Lord Ram had, it's a Vedic number. Just consider this. How many? 1 koti maha oga. It sounds sort of, you know, heavy, doesn't it? 1 koti maha oga. It means one followed by 64 zeros. That's a big number. And Ravana, he was such a person. He saw this and he thought, no problem. I'll just kill them all. The night before, Lord Ram approached Ravana and said, listen, all your family is dead. All your army is dead. Everyone is dead except you. So now, Ravana, let us make a deal. You just give Sita back. That's all. You just give Sita back. I will bring all of your army, your family. I'll bring everyone back to life. And I will make everyone forget that we were ever enemies. I will make them think we've always been friends. And we will be friends. And you rule Lanka. You rule Lanka. You keep everything. Just give Sita back, that's all. And you know, sometimes you face decisions. You have to make decisions. Sometimes you make the wrong decision, isn't it? Unfortunately, Ravana made the wrong decision. He said no. And the next day he was killed. So the thing is, why did Lord Ram choose to undertake this mission of rescuing Sita in that way? Why? And why not in some easy way, which he could have done? It would just have been nothing. So the reason for that is because he wanted to show how much his devotee means to him and what he is prepared to do for his devotee. Even if there's just extreme hardship and a great price to be paid, but for his pure devotee, the Lord is willing, he's happy to do anything. So this we can learn from these pastimes of Lord Ram. There's so many things we can learn, actually. And today is his appearance day. So we can offer some prayers to Lord Ram. You are very kind. You were ready to accept Ravana. You are ready to accept him. So please, my dear Lord, please accept me. And we, within our hearts, we can utter this prayer. My dear Lord,
from this day on,
I am yours. Yes. And we can pray to the Lord for courage internally and know that he'll give us that courage and we will always be safe. Doesn't just mean physically safe, but spiritually safe by the mercy of Lord Ram. Hare Krishna. Hare Rama.
Hare Rama.
Shri Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman Ki. Shri Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman Ki. Shri Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman Ki. Shri Ram Navami Mahotsava Ki. O Premanande. Well, I don't know if it'll be anticlimactic, but we have some questions here today. Okay, let me just answer a couple of questions, if that's okay. There are, in Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 3, there are a number of incarnations of the Lord that are listed, yes. In the same list, there's the four Kumars, Narada Muni, Vyasadeva, and then Lord Ram and Lord Krishna. Please explain how Lord Ram and Krishna are different from Narada Muni and Vyasadeva. Well, these particular two, Narada Muni and Vyasadeva, they're living entities like us, but they're empowered by a complete potency of the Lord. Narada is empowered by the complete bhakti shakti, the complete potency of devotion of the Lord. Vyasadeva is empowered. He's called the literary incarnation, the complete capacity of the Lord to express himself in words. Whereas Lord Ram and Lord Krishna, they're not living entities like us who are empowered. They're actually the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. Actually, Krishna is the original and Lord Ram is coming from him. Here's a trick question. Listen to this. Which year in Lord Brahma's life are we currently living in? Okay, listen to this. We're living in the year 2017. Sorry. What else could I say? But we are in the 28th cycle of the four yugas. In the lifetime or period of rule of the seventh of the 14 manus that are there in one day of Lord Brahma. That at least gives you an idea. Oh, okay. Why are there different dates with regard to the celebration of Ram Nomi in South Africa? For many people observed Ram Nomi yesterday. We're observing today. And it's not just that we want to be different. But the thing is this, you know, it's a little technical thing that we follow. These days, this is the Navami, the ninth day of the moon. Ram Navami. Gaur, we just celebrated Gaur Purnima, full moon day. We follow the lunar calendar. You know, the moon shifts. The moon shifts. So about every 100 or so years, the dates of the lunar calendar have to be recalculated. And some of our devotees with computers have recalculated the lunar. The last time it was recalculated was done by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. He sort of revised the system of lunar calendar calculation. Yeah. At that time, like in the, 1920s or something like that. So our devotees have recalculated, and therefore, not always, but sometimes, there's now a shift by one day. That in our calendar, generally it's in our calendar, not every event, but some events are one day later than in the other sort of more general calendars, which have not been recalculated. And you know, this is not the time to have a class about Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, but he was an expert, massive expert in these, in astronomy and astrology, and he severely chastised the calendar makers of those days for not recalculating, that they were giving dates and things were being celebrated on days which were not the days. Here's the last one. Here we go, devotees. Some say that Lord Ram prayed to Shiva or Durga. Is this true? Well, you know, there are different versions of Ramayana. It's a little bit different. And I don't mean Valmiki Ramayana as opposed to Tulsidas Ramcharitamanas. I don't mean different like that. There are different versions, somewhat different versions of Valmiki Ramayana. Somewhat different versions. Some include Lord Ram praying to Lord Shiva. Some do not. Srimad Bhagavatam, which gives a brief description of the pastimes of Lord Ram, and which we know to be completely authentic, does not mention Lord Ram praying to Lord Shiva. But even if he did, it is not a problem like what happened to Lord Ram. Oh my God, are we worshipping the wrong people? Maybe we should go back to worshipping Lord Shiva. No, the thing is that a devotee, well, the Lord sometimes may worship his devotee, serve his devotee. We know in Bhagavad Gita, what is Bhagavad Gita? It's Lord Krishna, of course, instructing Arjuna, but Lord Krishna is the chariot driver. He's serving his devotee. And Arjuna's saying, go this way. And Lord Krishna's making the chariot go this way. Arjuna says, now go that way. And Krishna's taking the chariot that way. And Arjuna's just ordering Krishna around this way, that way, faster, slower, whatever. And the Lord is happily serving his devotee. Happily serving his devotee. So for the Lord to serve or to worship or to glorify a great devotee like Lord Shiva, Vaishnavanam Yata Shambhu. It's actually, that's from Srimad Bhagavatam. It's sometimes said he's the greatest devotee. So for the Lord to do that, it is not like something is wrong, that he shouldn't do it. It's wrong for him to do it. Whether he did it or not, you know, that's another question. But assuming he did do it, the Lord does these things. The Lord does these things from time to time. So there you go, devotees. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Rama.
Hare Rama.